Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Jackson State Division of Athletics announced that the 2021 baseball season tickets are on sale. Fans can expect to see a full slate of SWAC rivals in 2021 and intriguing non-conference games at Bob Bradley Field. For more information or to purchase season tickets, visit the JSU ticket office at Mississippi Veterans Memorial Stadium, call 601-979-2420, or go online at Ticketmaster. The ticket office on campus is closed. Baseball season tickets, general admission, $50. Single game, $5. And kids get in for $3. Go Tigers!
Tiger fans, welcome to episode 121 of the official Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club podcast, bringing you all the latest news, updates, and buzz surrounding your mighty JSU Tigers. I am the Corey C. Be sure to download and subscribe to the podcast to be notified of every new episode. Apple Podcast users, rate and review the show, and everyone, follow Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club on Facebook and Tiger Talk 1400 on Instagram and Twitter. It all helps the cause, which is the I love Jackson State University. Hosting today's show is Charles Bishop.
Welcome to another episode of Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club. And first and foremost, let me start by thanking all of our listeners and subscribers who tune in to listen to these episodes of Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club to get their slice of Jackson State sports, news, history, and even a little bit of opinion. And as we always say, it all helps the cause, which is the I love. You know, Jackson State isn't short on great coaches who have brought the school wins and titles. Legends, the late, great W.C. Gordon, the late John Merritt, and the late, great Paul Covington in basketball. This is another episode where we bring to you a living legend. Our guest is the foundation of Jackson State baseball. His time as a skipper of the Jackson State baseball team, he won 824 games, 12 conference championships. He also was the Tigers athletic director. He's in numerous Hall of Fames. He's in the Jackson State Sports Hall of Fame in 1985. 2003, he became the first African-American to enter the Baseball Coaches of America Hall of Fame. And he was honored in 2016 as he was added to the National College Baseball Hall of Fame, becoming just the second SWAC coach to receive that honor. Ladies and gentlemen, let's please welcome to Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club, Coach Robert Bob Bradley.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much, Chuck. It's my pleasure, and thank you for letting me share my opinion. And as one of the great, one of the Tigers, blue and white, you know, we all bleed blue and white, and also merch to that university and to the people that extended the hand to us, and especially to me and my family by allowing me to become the first head baseball coach in Jackson State University baseball history.
Wow. And you know, Coach, when I was doing my research to interview you, I knew you were an all-conference pitcher, 1962-63, but I didn't know Joe Gilliam was the baseball coach at the time.
Hey, Joe Gilliam probably impacted my life as a person, a coach, other than my dad and a few other people. Joe Gilliam had a tremendous impact on my life, not only mine, but the guys that played for him back in the early 60s. He came to Jackson State, I believe it was probably in 1962 or something like that, when I was a sophomore. And he was a football coach, and he was a real sergeant. I won't say he knew a lot about baseball, but as far as being a disciplinarian, getting the most out of an individual and shaping a person's history into young men and becoming men of the future. He had an outstanding impact on my life. Joe Gillian, and of course he had his sons and daughters, his whole family there, a great part of the of my history also.
That is phenomenal. Just listen, and I just can't imagine Roy Curry, Willie Richardson, yourself, all on campus. You know, all these legends at the same time.
Oh man, it seemed like it was just the other day that we had the barracks there. You know, of course, you had Willie, you had Vernon Biggs, and you had all those guys that played football there. And you had a lot of athletes that played double sports. They played not only football, but Willie was a great golfer. And the athlete was more than just a one sport athlete in those days. If you could play both sports or start in both sports, you was able to participate. So that goes back to 1962 when I was a sophomore. And of course, as you said, I made an all-conference as a pitcher, but my claim to fame is that they put me in the wrong position.
Where did they have you, Coach?
I always felt that I was a better position player, and I just was a player that was able to play more than one position, because when Coach Gillian scouted me, he scouted me, I was a shortstop for the Homestead Grade, the old Homestead Grade that was playing baseball in Jackson, Mississippi. I was one of a few younger person that was playing with that team, and he came out there, and somebody told him that I could pitch. You know, they were looking for pitchers on the staff, and he signed me, and somebody told him, they said, one of your best ball players is this Bob Braddy, who played shortstop in the outfield for you. Because I started as an outfielder my freshman year at Jackson State and earned a scholarship that year. So by the mere fact that I was able to pitch and I'm pretty successful. Like I said, I made all conference and my sophomore year, I made Pittsburgh Curry honorable mention, All-American as a pitcher. I averaged something like 9, almost 10 strikeouts a game. And I remember striking out 16 batters in a game. And the mere fact that I could throw strikes and had a pretty good arm, it worked out well for me. So I'm not complaining about being a pitcher, but I still think I was a better position player.
You know, I started off the show and mentioned, you know, this is, you know, just mind-boggling, 824 wins, 12 conference championships. But when, you know, Coach, when you sit back and kind of look back at the breadth of your career, as extensive as it is, you know, what sticks out? What things, you know, that you look back and you just kind of grin and smile at?
Oh, there are several situations there where it make an impression on my mind. Certainly all the players that I coached that went on not only to pro ball, Dave Clark, Marv Freeman, Wes Chamberlain, all those guys, Kurt Ford, but the guys that didn't go pro and some of them probably should have, they just didn't get that opportunity. And when they called back, and to this day, every fall, Dave Clark and some of the baseball guys, we have a standard date in November after the baseball season. Of course, he was third base coach with the he was the coach with the Detroit Tigers. I don't know where he's back with them this year, since they're going through some changes. But they will come in. They'll come into town and they will play 2 or 3 days of golf. And the most touching thing is that when we sit down for dinner or lunch, they tell me the impact that I had on their lives, them not knowing the impact that they had on my life, just to see them grow into productive young men, family men, husbands, and fathers, and just doing a great job. But when they say that I had an impact on it, man, it's unsurreal.
That's amazing. But
they would give me that the opportunity to come back and be a part of that. But and the other thing that happened that I remember quite often is that the opportunity to coach my son. I was able to coach my son baseball at Jackson State. My daughter was a cheerleader, and I can't think of a better experience that could have been provided by God by allowing me the opportunity to coach my son and to impact his life along with others. And those are one of the greatest experiences that I've had. Not only the fact that you met, that I got a chance to meet some outstanding professional people like Tom Lasorda, who came here on several occasions to raise funds. Frank Robinson, who came into town, Hank Aaron, Dusty Baker, those guys, you know. But those are memories, and you know, there's always somebody. I'm a firm believer that there's always somebody who you can look back who was a wind beneath your wing that really prepare you to be that. And it goes back to my father, who was a farmer, a family of 14, seven brothers and six sisters. And when I look back on life, when I see that we were, my dad was very, it took me a long time to figure out that he was a lot smarter than I was. And that common sense, if you got a degree in common sense, is a lot of times it's better than a PhD degree. And he had great common sense, because what he would do on a Saturday afternoon is that he would take his pickup truck and take all the boys that wanted to play in the community. And we would go and we would play in a car pass, or play baseball. And my oldest brother helped form that team, because he's gone, bless his heart, was a career veteran. And those are the things that I remember, that we thought Dad was allowing us to play ball because he just loved the game of baseball. But later on, we found out that it was his way of realizing that in order to keep these young men, and this is a message to us today too, is that in order to keep our young men and boys engaged and to become useful citizens and allow them to make decisions, is to keep them involved. So he kept us involved in these activities, baseball, every Saturday afternoon. He wouldn't let us play on Sunday for a while. But I can visualize us being on the back of that pickup truck and going places and just playing all across the county there and playing different people. And every community, especially our Black community, had a baseball team. And that's something that we have lost altogether. And when we start talking about crime within our inner cities later on, that's one of the points that I want to remember, is that a lot of these things that are happening in our city is because that we have just dropped the ball, and we have just failed to engage our kids in recreation activities. And when I say us, I mean our inner city mayors, our representatives, our local people who would not keep up the recreational parks. It's just heartbreaking. And sometimes I feel like I fail to get my message across when it comes to the crime thing, but we'll talk about that later. But getting back to the impact on my life, you know, it goes back to where it started with my dad. And when I think of the fact that we can't even find a girls' fast pitch softball team in the state of Mississippi. And I don't know how any other place. And you know, this is a part of the growing up process. We got to keep these young people involved. So without that, I don't know where me and my brothers and a lot of other young men in the community would have ended up.
No doubt. You know, that's a very interesting point you bring up in terms of the involvement, just to get you guys out there and be active and to have that sort of outlet, if you will. So, you know, that's a tremendous point that you bring up. And like you said, I'm going to get to that. Before I get to that, you know, I wanted to ask this question, because this is just a tremendous time of swag baseball. And I wanted to ask you, you know, during your time, you know, coach at Jackson State, gosh, man, you had some epic weekends matching wits with other legends around the swag, whether you're talking about, you know, Wilbert Ellis at Grambling, who has three swag titles, or Coach Rat McGowan at Alcorn, he got five.
Rappadale Cato down there, Southern. Oh man, those were some experiences that wasn't always pleasant.
Right.
You know, although most of the championship was won between when I started coaching, between us, Southern, and a few Grambling. But before that, you go back to a coach named Emory Hines, who coached at Southern University. And you had a guy named the president of Grambling that was coaching at Grambling.
Ralph Waldo Emerson.
And I can remember those guys. I can remember the coach from Southern. There was Coach Hines and Bob. There's another coach that he was. Yes, Bob Lee,
Nashville,
I believe. They came to Jackson. They gave a clinic, and here I was, you know, those people were willing to share, but all that faded out where we didn't have clinic for our community. But talking about the old rivalry, you know, Rat, we weren't always friends. I tell you that. I have to be honest. We used to, like, you just about had to bring out the National Guard when we played with them.
Those were epic matchups, yeah.
There was one place that I hated to go, and that was a Hulk Horn. I used to hate to go there because at the time they were allowing all the coaches to hire their own official. So if you didn't win at your home game, then you just about wasn't going to win on the road. I thought we did a better job of having good officials, of course, because Rat can say we had some bad ones also, but. I just never will forget playing down there on that field in Lorimer, Mississippi, and the football coaches, Coach Castle, would even stop football practice. And a lot of the football players would come over there and jump on top of our dugouts and throw rocks at our players. And if we had somebody, we had one guy on the team, you probably remember him, James Marsh. He's deceased now. One hell of a baseball player and football player, and he played pro ball for a while, but he batted over 500 as a baseball player, and I think he would have had a future in the big leagues if he had decided to go that route, but, you know, he's a great football player too, but I never forget that he was playing, and the football player came out there and threw rocks at him, and then the umpire would, hey, I'll tell you this story about Alcorn, because Rat's not here to defend it, but it's a true story that we were leading them by 12 runs going into the eighth inning. And we lost 13-12 going into the inning later. And our pitcher couldn't throw strikes. And then when our guy hit the ball, we had the bases loaded and hit the foul. And dust, there was chalk, you know, chalk is the foul line. I mean, if the ball hit the chalk, it's a fair ball. And the umpire came out and said it was a foul ball. And I said, well, why is it a foul ball? He said, because the ball hit the chalk. I said, what do you think that? That's your guy, man, that knew it was a fair ball. So I sat down in the middle of the field, and of course Rat, the policeman had to come and get Rat because he thought I was showing disrespect for Alcorn and putting on the mound. But those were some times, and we had some great times. And I remember as a player at Jackson State that coach from Grambling, the president, Waldo Ralph Emerson, he called him the president. And he has an outstanding player like Tommy Agee played for the New York Mets. Cleon Jones, we played against them. And then Lou Brock played at Southern a year before I got there. There were just some tremendous ball players that came through our conference. And now we just don't realize the importance of how important the black institutions are to keeping baseball alive. Major League Baseball, one of the 712 baseball players, but we're looking at black schools. Two things of cutting out baseball. I just read in the paper about Howard University discontinuing in baseball. Tennessee State discontinued baseball sometime ago. And I just don't realize. I know. I think they realize the importance of keeping baseball involved. And then we hire. And I don't have anything against coaches, but I think we need to hire people at our institutions that's going to go back into our community, teach our kids. when you look at institutions like now, where you got Alabama State, you got four or five institutions, not only in our conference, but the SWAC conference, the hiring individual who has no intent of giving back to the Black community. And it's not a prejudice thing, but it's that we need to have people that's going to get our community involved and go back into our community and teach our kids. And that's one thing that I don't quite understand that we're doing. But so we're doing about as much to hurt ourselves as anybody else. That's the reason why we don't have more Blacks participating. But Coach Gremlin, Roger Cato, Wilbert Ellis, all those guys are great friends and great competitors, and it was a pleasure that we were able to go out there and compete.
No doubt about it.
And there are a lot of things that I think that helped destroy not only college baseball, but Black sports and football, and somewhat in basketball to this day, is that, you know, at one time that we were competing. When we had Dennis Orkin, Board, and those guys, we were competing against the bigger schools, so to speak. And they came up with different rules to change to move the stick, as they say. They changed the rule in the middle of the game. First, they say that they come out with the ACT score, which the athletes were competing with and passing, getting in school. And then they came up with the Proposition 48. I don't know if you remember that. Yeah. Where a kid had to he had to pass so many core courses. And then they raised the ATC scores and the SAT scores to 18 and 20. And at the same time, our school was integrating and because it was the law of the land. But then you can hardly find a counselor in our schools now to advise our Black students, our Black athletes. It was sort of a double whammy. So we got to the place where we couldn't even get kids in school after the Orkin Board and those guys left because of the rules that we put on stipulation that was put in our school. Not that we couldn't compete, but the goalposts are the rules kept changing in the middle of the game. And then it's had where you had to go to a junior college. If you didn't have that average, then you couldn't get into a four-year school, so you go to junior college. So we started sending kids to Utica Junior College, and after they get there and get 24 hours, come back. So they changed that rule, and they say they had to graduate. Okay, then after you say you got to graduate, now they integrated the junior colleges. Now you don't have any Black coaches. You don't have any Black counselors. Man, the problem is so, it was impounded. So, but there is a way, like I say, that we can compete. But we got to have our community to realize that it's not basketball and football that has destroyed Blacks in baseball.
Let me ask this question. And because you've seen sort of the evolution of the Black athlete migrate, if you will, from playing baseball to basketball and football. And I wanted to ask this question in terms of a timeline. When do you think that migration sort of happened? Because, and I'll take a look at it from this standpoint, when Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, they hit the NBA, and then, of course, Jordan hits Chapel Hill, University of North Carolina, and then onto the NBA, I think I saw a gradual migration of guys, you know, moving toward basketball and then even more so towards football. Is there a timeline where you sit back and say, this is where it kind of started happening?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And it really, really started when our athletes, when I can remember when Ole Miss and Mississippi State and those people would not accept Black athletes. Mm-hmm. Special football player. I can remember Johnny Vaught sent a quarterback to Michigan State because they couldn't get him, and so he said he was sending Black athletes up there. But so I think it was sort of like it started probably let me put it this way: in 1978, we had one of the greatest baseball teams that I've coached. We won something like 52 ball games and lost 12. And we had some outstanding athletes. And but usually around in the 80s, when the NCAA came up with the rules where the kids could not go to school, could not get into your school unless they had a certain average. And by the mere fact that we didn't have the resources to compete with those schools, you know, facility-wise, you know, let's take facilities. We've lost out tremendously because of the lack of our facilities. And I think you know what I mean. If you go to Jack State now with Deion Sanders over there, which is hopefully going to be well, is that you find out that facility-wise, that we just couldn't compete. And then when the schools in the South start recruiting the black athletes, they got the cream of the crop. And therefore, the ones that the diamond in the rough that we would usually get and just wait for them to develop, we weren't even getting the diamond in the rough anymore. The diamond in the rough wouldn't even get a chance to compete. So we got to a place where they couldn't even get into school. And because they couldn't pass the test, and testing is okay, but there have been a lot of great professionals, a lot of lawyers that came out of predominantly black schools that didn't have ACT tests. When teachers would really take pride in making sure that the students were and their parents was involved in the activity, all that kind of left with. Left with integration. So I think the answer to your question, it started disintegrating when the black athletes, they started getting their best black athletes to enroll at the University of Mississippi and the Mississippi States and the Alabamas and the Georgias. And we were not able to recruit those athletes anymore. Can you remember when in football that Jackson State had 11 players drafted to the professional rank with Lim Barney, Jackie Slater, and Robert Brazil, and all those guys. They had about 11 guys drafted in the pro. Nowadays, people say, well, why don't we get athletes drafted from the predominant HBCU schools now? Because we don't get those athletes. One of the main reasons we don't get through athletes is because of resources. We don't have the facilities. Whether it's basketball, and when the legislature that is predominantly white would approve funds to build facilities, they did not give us the funds to build facilities that would compete with the predominantly white schools. So if a kid got to the place where he was all American, and you brought him to Jackson State where he has to live three to a room or go to a old mess where he got his own room, he got his own computer.
Makes a big difference.
He can practice and go back and watch himself in practice. We HBCU schools didn't have that. So we're fighting with short arms, you know. We can't compete unless you have the funds. So I'm hoping that with Deion Sanders and other the country and the mood that we're in now, that they want to do something for the HBCU schools, that we'll get better facilities, we'll get first class weight rooms, we'll get a first class football facility, a baseball facility. Because baseball, hey, look at baseball in the country as a whole. It's thriving.
And that actually leads me to this question here, Coach. We're in 2020, and personally, I think one of the best baseball players in the major leagues right now is Mookie Betts. But you know, where are we in regards to the African-American athlete and the game of baseball? And I guess I ask that question in terms of, does the game of baseball itself have enough cool factor, if you will, to, you know, kind of propel us forward going into 2021?
You know, baseball, if you really look at it, Chuck, baseball, you can play baseball probably longer than any other sport out there. No concussions, hardly, and the injury rates and all that. Let me say this: it's sort of twofold. It's sort of twofold is that, you know, studies have shown that when youth are involved and organized in youth sports, that it indeed reduces crime. And now you got to the place now where the inner city schools don't even have the facilities, and your predominantly white schools, well, they're not white anymore, but your predominant school won't come and play in the city of Jackson because our facilities for baseball is dilapidated. They would not come. So my point is this. What I'm saying is that we have missed the boat. And I think that I know myself, I've done a poor job of trying to explain to mayors and city officials the importance of having an organized recreational program, and that there is a correlation, there's a direct correlation between crime and our kids being involved in recreational activities. So there's a correlation. I say it's time versus crime. There's more crime in our inner cities because there are less recreational activities for our kids. The city of Jackson has something like 16,000 students. They have something like 12,000 students from 6th through the 12th grade. They don't even have they have one park that they can possibly play baseball. They have no practice facilities that they can call their own. They have no lighted field. So therefore, a lot of the kids are not participating. They even cutting out baseball in some of our schools. So my point is, I think that we have to realize that if we got a good inner city recreational program, and the most important time that you keep these kids involved is when they're out of school. Just think about when you grew up and your older brothers and sisters grew up, just think about what you all did when school was out in May or June. You had, in the city of Jackson, you had Grove Park, you had Forest Hill Park. You had a park full of people that were participating in softball. The boys were playing baseball against each other from kids all over the city of Jackson. They knew each other because they were competing against each other. So, but now when the recreation departments became to the point where they were non-existent, now these kids resorted to the streets. A lot of them resorted to the street, because this is where they was getting their respect from, that they were not getting their recognition. They were not enrolled in the Boys Club. The Boy Scouts were reduced, and your representatives were not getting these kids involved. Mm. So the problem goes back to the fact that the studies have proven, I'm not talking off the top of my head, Chuck. Studies have proven that when kids are involved in recreation activities, that crime is actually reduced. And not only does it teach them to play, to be involved, now you flood the market. If you got 12,000 kids from 6th through 12th grade, I got a league with to get a league in Jackson, where we got approved by the World Series people up in what's the name of the group that we have the World Series? I'm trying to think. World Series baseball, where they had a World Series every year.
Oh yeah, Little League World Series.
Yeah, Little League. There you go, Little League. I got a Little League charter. Forest Hill Park, we have 8 fields down there that the city does not keep up. Now it was once a thriving park when it was integrated, but as the school become more segregated and people move out to the outer part of Jackson, the parks were not kept up.
That's a huge issue.
But the money, it couldn't have been. It's just that the priority there. We talk about hiring policemen, but we don't talk about the policemen getting involved with these local activities and getting these kids involved. Just think, 12,000 kids in the city of Jackson, not to mention the surrounding area of Bolton and Edwards. those black kids are doing little or nothing. Now, you do have a few people that are escaping. The superstars will always be sure. found. They're going to find them in travel ball, but the diamond in the rough is just not there. So my point is this, is that we got to get involved in recreation activity, because the recreation activity teach kids a lot. It teach them to make decisions. It brings solidarity to the community. It builds up kids' self-esteem. It builds up their character. And they get to know each other. So instead of fighting each other with guns, they'll fight each other on the baseball field trying to beat each other's brains out there. So that's my take on what has happened to the lack of baseball players and what has happened to our why you don't see that many in the big
tremendous
leagues.
Tremendous insight, Coach. I really appreciate you sharing your perspective in regards to where we are with regards to African-American athletes and the game of baseball. Because I think sometimes, you know, the question becomes, is the culture of baseball one and that does not include the African-American athlete in terms of, you know, expression and things of that nature? You know, baseball is a stoic game, but that's a tremendously cerebral game. But, you know, there's always questions in terms of, you know, how do we get the African-American athlete coming back to baseball? So I definitely appreciate, you know, your insight and perspective on, you know, where are we going with regards to trying to, you know, build those numbers back up, if you will.
Like I said, I firmly believe it, that you got to tie it in with, you just can't say that I'm going to train kids to be a professional baseball player. I think we have to address the crime problem within our city, within our inner cities. And I think if you do the proper thing by addressing the crime problem, I think we will find the solution there.
Sure.
When I go out to, and people don't like hear me say this, don't like hear me say this. When I go out to the city of Pearl, when I go out to the city of Brandon, when I go out to the city of Madison, they have built new facilities. They got all kinds of baseball facilities for boys and girls. And once school is out, when you go out there, it is flooded with kids. You don't have enough. You can't. You have so many teams that you can't hardly get them going there. But 90% of them, you know who are playing it. They're not our kids, because, you know, we a few of them go out there and play, but the majority, the vast number of our kids are out there in the streets. They are doing nothing. And my challenge is to our inner cities and to our elected officials is that we got to change courses now. You got to switch. You can't just keep talking about we need policemen. You know, we need policemen to go to these parks and meet these kids and say, hey, I'm your policeman in this precinct. I'm your friend. I'm interested in your growth. But we don't have that. So the kids look at the policemen as being their enemy. So we have dropped the ball. We have dropped it. And until we can address this thing from the crime standpoint, now we can get these kids involved in recreational activity. Think, if you've got City of Jackson, if you've got 8,000 kids playing in the summer, and it's just not enough for them to play football and basketball during the school year, look at what's happening to our kids once school is out. They are literally doing nothing. They're in the street with their phones, their computers, and the baseball parks are empty. So until we can address that, I can remember going back and how old are you, Chuck?
I'm 47.
Okay, you're 47. You grew up where?
North Jackson.
In North Jackson. So you know all about Grove Park.
Yes, sir. Definitely Grove Park. Grew up playing, you know, Grove Park. Then North Jackson,
DCU,
Level Woods, you know, the travel circuit.
Battlefield Park.
Yes, mm-hmm.
You don't see that anymore. Last year, Grove Park had a problem having enough kids to have a league. You know, Forest Hill, we had 8 baseball fields out there. We sent out registration. We had problems getting enough teams to have a league. These, you're talking about 6 and 7 year old, 7 to 8 year old, 8 and 9 year old, 10, 11, right through 13.
Right.
You know, a few of them are playing football. They play football, but we can't put that on football. Mm. You know, you can put 11 people on a football team, but you can play baseball. You can keep more people involved. You can get more people involved in recreation activities than any other sport when school is out.
Yes, sir.
Go to Pearl, go to Madison, say that, and you see what's happening. Go to Jackson, nothing is happening. And then we wonder what happened to our kids. We have dropped the ball. We just don't get them engaged. Your dad got you involved. Mom got you involved. They cook for you. They cook hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You look forward to the weekend tournament.
It was definitely a weekend. It was a whole weekend, you know, of baseball. You went from Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
You get me started. I can't stop, man. But I really wish you would just gear in on this thing about the inner city and the lack of our kids involved in recreation activities. And by the mere fact that our mayors and our councilmen do not push it. They push hiring policemen, and as soon as somebody gets killed, they want to have a prayer meeting on the block.
Mm.
You know, stop the killing. But they don't ever talk about what we need to do to invest in our kids. We got to invest in our kids' lives at an early age. And my philosophy is this: if you give a kid, a boy or a girl, a bat, a ball, and a place to play, and you won't find them going astray. That's the old age adjective. If you keep these kids involved, get them out there, as they grow up, they get a chance to make decisions. You encourage grandparents and parents to be a part of what they are doing. They improve their self-esteem. It brings the community together. And it forces the importance of working with the team, teamwork. That's something that builds character, and it helps develop life skills.
No doubt about it. Well, Coach, this, we've got to do a part two and a part three. This is good stuff.
We started rambling along. We sort of got away from Jackson State baseball, but I tell you what, I became the first baseball coach at Jackson State in 1973. First time. Coach Gordon was the baseball coach at the time. Before that, Bob Hill was the baseball coach. But I was the first full-time baseball coach in the history of the school in 1973. And you know, you're talking about a guy that's glad to get out of the field and get out of the country and come in the bright lights, you know. That was me, you know. So it was a pathway not only for my life, but for a lot of individuals who was able to go to school and participate in the baseball program. And then we won the championship our first year there in 1973. Mm-hmm. We had guys like in 78, like All Ken Board, and then we came along. We had two first round draft picks, Dave Clark, Earl Sanders. And then, as you said, there was a time when things start fizzling out. We don't build facilities. Baseball, we need to build baseball fields now that have at least one sky box, have chair back seating so people can go and they can enjoy and bring their kids out. That's my challenge to our community and to the inner city community.
Coach, this has been phenomenal. I tell you, like I said, we're going to have to do this again, but it has been just a pleasure having you on Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club. Like we said, a living legend, the foundation of Jackson State baseball, and Coach Omar Johnson, he has taken the mantle, taken the baton, and he's won a couple of SWAC championships himself, kept Jackson State very relevant in terms of the SWAC play. But we're just appreciative for all that you've done, not just from a baseball standpoint, but also in athletic administration as well. You are Jackson State through and through to the core, and just appreciative that you were able to come and bring your knowledge and experience to a new generation of Jackson State fans.
Thank you, Chuck. And let me say this. There's a lot that we have to do. And when I say we, I mean friends in the community of HBCU school. And even our graduates, there are a lot that we can do to make our schools better. And I say, so let's take football, for instance. You know, there is no reason why Jackson State shouldn't be able to sell 20,000 season tickets. Even if it's selling for, let's say if it's selling for $100. Of course, you got boxes don't cost more and all that. If you sold 20,000 season football tickets, that is $2 million. Now, we can't wait to see how good the team going to be. We can't wait to see, you know, don't we like to do it? I'm going to wait and get my ticket when to see how it's. Well, you can't do that. You got to have the money in the coffer. And not only Jackson State, but Alcorn and other HBCU schools. If you want your school to thrive, you need to invest in them. You need to pay your alumni dues. And like I say, if you sold 20,000 seat ticket at $100 a piece, then that's $2 million. But it's not counting the box season, it's going to cost more. Now, if you did that, you don't have to play those money games. They're not guys who want to get their brains beat out playing games that they know they can't win, that they can't compete with these big-time athletes. And you can't get big-time athletes unless you have big-time facilities. Even if you're a Deion Sanders, you got to have facilities. You got to have a first-class weight room. But my thing to our HBCU friends and supporters, even your businesses, concentrate on selling your football season tickets. If you can do that, and even your basketball season ticket. If you sold 3,000 basketball season tickets, stop sitting around waiting for somebody to give you something. You know, pay your alumni dues, buy season tickets. Then if it don't work, then give them hell.
Yes, sir.
And I'm thinking as the oldest, I think I'm the oldest now surviving athletic coach of the era of my day. We lost Coach Gordon. We lost Coach Covington. And of course, I think I'm the oldest surviving coach at Jackson State. And I was athletic director for us, you know, for a while there also. So I'm appealing to our supporters to go out and buy season tickets. Buy the season tickets so the money would be in the bank. I think you'll see a difference in our program.
Well, I tell you what, this has been fun. We have got to do this again, Coach. And I tell you what, for Charles Bishop here with the 1400 Club, this was a living legend and Coach Robert Bob Brady. We thank you for coming on. And until next time, we'll see you on the other side.
And that'll do it for episode 121 of Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club. Thank you to all of our listeners. And again, be sure to download and subscribe to the podcast. Apple Podcast listeners, rate and review the show. And everyone, follow Tiger Talk with the 1400 Club on Facebook and Tiger Talk 1400 on Instagram and Twitter. I can't stress the importance of this enough. We're looking to do some big things with this platform to aid the athletics department. And it all starts with you. Downloading, subscribing, rating, and reviewing the show. And tell every Tiger that you know. We're on all podcast outlets. Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, and so on. And we'll be posting each episode on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages. As always, thanks for your support. Go Tigers. Hashtag the I love.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.